Today we're beginning a new series entitled God Creating, Existing, Revealing. And does God exist? This is a question that most of us ask at some time. You hear it discussed in all sorts of different situations. I quite like listening to national radio on a Saturday morning and hearing the speakers. Inevitably, if they speak about God, it's always from the point of view that they don't think God exists. But you've probably had discussions about this with family and friends and workmates. It's not up there at the top of the discussion list, but sometimes you'll just be sitting around, you'll be thinking of the deeper things of life, and people will ask about this. Or particularly if you're a Christian, if someone knows you're a Christian, then maybe if they're puzzled about some things, they may ask you, you know, why do you think this way? What do you think about the existence of God? So this question goes to the core of who we are, where we're from, really to do with our being. Does God exist? And at the beginning, I want to state what is probably obvious to you. I am biased. I believe in God. I believe God exists. I'm not teetering on the fence somewhere. I don't have any doubts about this. While I understand the arguments of those who would say God doesn't exist, I'm not convinced by them. So when I speak to you about it, I'm not doing this in a neutral way. You've got to understand, I'm coming to you as one who really does believe. I'm fully persuaded, as I know many of you are, that God exists. I have been for years. In a sense, I've put my whole life on this, as indeed many of you have. I'm in this totally, no holds barred. And I don't think you would expect anything less of me. In fact, if when I had been applying to be minister here, I had said to you, well, you know, I'm not quite sure whether God exists or not. I don't think I would have got very far in that process of interviewing. Because you expect your minister to believe that God exists. And I think it's also fair to say that if someone is new to a church and they're beginning to try and understand Christianity and understand God, they also expect the minister to believe. And not to sort of speak neutrally about God, but to speak with persuasion about why they think God exists. That's why you come to church when you're seeking, because you want those sort of answers. You want to hear that side of what people are saying. Well, recently I was introduced to an elderly lady, and it went like this. A friend from Epsom introduced me to her and said, "This is John, the new minister at Epsom." And being a very polite fellow, I put out my hand to shake her hand, and she took my hand, and I said, "Hello," and she said to me, "I don't believe in God," turned very quickly and walked away. Now, I don't very often have people sort of greet me in that way. And given half a chance, I would have spoken to her about that, because I'm really interested in what she was saying. Because in part, I haven't met very many real dyed-in-the-wool atheists. Most of the atheists I speak to, an atheist is a person who doesn't believe in God. Doesn't believe in the existence of God. And most atheists I speak to turn out to be, I think, more agnostic, where they allow for the existence of God, but God can't be known. Nothing is known about God. And personally, I think being an agnostic is more tenable than being an atheist. You see, you cannot prove there is no God. And to be fair, you cannot prove there is a God. But if an atheist is to be consistent, given there's no conclusive proof that there is no God, they must, however remote it may seem, allow the possibility that God exists. In all the mystery, in all the wonder, in all the things that are unknown to us, there must be that possibility, however slim it may seem to them, that God exists. And so, given that there's no proof that God doesn't exist, then their belief that God does not exist is actually, for them, also a step of faith. It's trusting that the evidence they have is sufficient for the conclusion they make. So when a person says they don't believe in God, it's a matter of their belief, their opinion, rather than proven fact. Because rational thought can only take you so far when you're thinking about this question. And then it becomes a matter of belief and faith. Now similarly, it's true that Christians cannot prove the existence of God, and that we are trusting the evidence we hold is sufficient for the conclusion we make. So when we say we believe in God, it's a statement of faith. But for Christians, the great thing is we have no problem with faith. We love faith. It's something we use all the time. We put our faith in God, our faith in Jesus, our faith in the words of Scripture. To us, faith is not a problem. It's a step that we're quite happy to take, quite happy to be honest about, quite happy to put out there. Faith is the norm in Christian life. We count on it. We use it all the time. We don't shy away from it. We don't feel ashamed of it. Faith is faith, and it's a part of our belief system. So, while we have a lot of evidence pointing towards the existence of God, we know that it is by faith we trust in God, and Christians are more than happy to admit to this matter of faith. With regards to denying the existence of God, the thing that I think for many, many people with regard to this, their decision is not based on scientific rational evaluation of the evidence. So if you choose to believe there is no God, for some people they will take the view of looking things through rationally, but for many people, I think it's more of a moral question. You see, if you believe in God, then you are accountable to God, and this has huge implications in our lives. See, what we do on Monday, Tuesday, when we're at work on Wednesday afternoon and Friday, when we're with our friends, when we're with our family, all the moral choices that we make, they're all important. Now, I'm not suggesting that atheists are immoral, just that moral choices actually fit more readily with a worldview where there is a moral God who says, this is how life should be. Now, there are many morally good atheists, but it's just more difficult to find a solid basis for morality when you don't believe in God. Because if you don't believe in God, then you're really only accountable to yourself or your society. And you can do anything you want to do that society will allow you to do. And it's fine. And you can do all those things without having to consider whether or not they're actually right or wrong. Whether or not they're against God's laws. Whether or not it breaks God's love. You see, I think it's just morally convenient for many people not to believe in God. Considering the atheistic embrace of natural selection, which you've all heard, the survival of the fittest, which is basically brute chance, morality fits better with the existence of God than this brute chance of natural selection. And morality is an evidence for the existence of God. Now, you will have your own experience or belief, but whatever it is, you can't avoid this question. From time to time, it's going to be raised. It was asked in ancient times. It's asked in modern times. It continues to be asked all the time. It's at the heart of our identity. Were we created? Were we designed by God? Or are we a product of chaotic natural forces? Are we alone? Is there really a God there? Or are we alone in this universe? Or might there be something else out there? Does life, this life, have meaning, or is it really just chance? Well, when we look at the evidence that Christians bring to this, there are a number of things to speak of the existence of God. The Old Testament, looking at creation, says, "The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands." And in the New Testament, we read what may be known about God is plain to them because God made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that people are without excuse. And so many of us experience this. Well, I suppose from time to time we just go through our day without really noticing much. But sometimes you'll be driving home and there's a wonderful sunset. Or sometimes you'll go out in the night and the clouds disappear and there's a wonderful starry sky. And there are times like that when we remember there's a God who has made this and it speaks of Him. Well, when we think about it, the basic human question, one of the basic human questions is, why is there something rather than nothing? I'm told that's a basic human question. It's not one that I've pondered all that much. It's just going to be plain. There's something. But why is there something rather than nothing? You see, without a cause like a creative God, there's no reason for there to be anything. Without God, what caused all this something to come into existence? And given that there clearly is something, I'm here, you're here, the chairs are supporting you at the moment, the sun is shining, there clearly is something. What caused it to come into existence? And because that something is here, and we're part of that something, how come on planet Earth there's a life form that can appreciate it, that can study it, that can speculate about it? Not only can we appreciate something, we can also imagine things. They don't actually have to be there. You can close your eyes and imagine an elephant, and you can, you know, picture what an elephant is like. We have these wonderful faculties. We can remember the past, some dear friends who may have passed away, and we can think of them and the times that we had with them. They know those times no longer exist for us to see them, but we can hold them in our minds, and we can think about the future. Now, I can't do some of these other things personally, but I'm reliably informed that some people can formulate complicated mathematical theories and work out all sorts of wonderful things with all these formulas that they're able to write out or hold in their heads. And others can produce amazing works of art, beauty, wonderful, wonderful beauty, or create wonderful musical scores. And these things can move us. And these are wonderful creations. And human consciousness with the ability to sit down and self-reflect. I'll do this on Monday. John, you forgot to get that book out for the elders. What on earth were you thinking when you came to church today and you had to send Ainsley to go and get that book for you? We are able to sit down and think about these things and work out, oh yeah, okay, I know, next time I know how to change those things. Humanity is able to be conscious and self-aware, and it leads us to many interesting questions, streams of thought, some tricky questions that are hard to answer. We are something. And we can look at all this other stuff that is around us. But why is there something rather than nothing? And that something points to a cause, to a creator, to the existence of God. Now, it seems to me those who want to deny the existence of God have to try and fill that gap with something else. Without God, humanity is deeply lonely and on a desperate quest to fill that void, to find some other explanation for our existence. Because if you say it's not God, then you've got to find some other explanation to fill that. If you say God doesn't exist, you've got to find something else to fill that God sort of void. And so we stretch with science and engineering and mathematics, and we look for signs of life somewhere other than Earth so that we don't feel so alone. And we turn vast array of an antenna towards distant galaxies, listening to see if there might be some sort of sound out there of life from other planets. And we design spacecraft that we send away with probes to passing asteroids, to the moon, to Mars, to other planets, looking for signs of life, maybe signs that there was water there that could have meant that life came. And we're searching with highly sophisticated telescopes, hoping to find other Earth-like planets on which life might exist. And the more planets we find, the more we think, well, maybe, just maybe, there may be life on one of those distant planets, if in fact life is common and life can evolve. And some may describe this search as a search for intelligent life, or older civilizations that colonized deep space and somehow left the seeds of life on planets like ours that they may have passed through. But I just think all of this is a substitute search for God. There's a longing for something that is bigger than us, that is beyond us, that people just have to try and fill that void. We were made for fellowship with God, and our hearts are restless until we find Him. I think, in fact, many of these people searching for the source of life, albeit an alien encounter, all of this points to the existence of God. Now, I'm going to look at God our Creator next week. But for now, it's interesting to note, at least in passing, of scientists who speak of the anthropic principle that points. So this principle, it notes that the universe is sort of set up as if life was expected here. It notes that everything is fine-tuned. So gravity is just the right strength for life, a little bit stronger and we would be crushed. A little bit lighter and the atmosphere would disappear and we wouldn't be able to live. And the charge even within an atom and the ratio of its mass for the elements are just right so that things like hydrogen can exist and support carbon-based life forms. And the position that the Earth is from the sun in that Goldilocks zone, which it's not too hot and not too cold, is just right for life to be on this planet and the sun itself, which is just the right size and just as giving off energy as light rather than as vast amounts of radiation that would cook us. And the mass of the Earth, which has enough energy to allow for the life-giving movement of tectonic plates, and to allow that to exist where the Earth has both height in the mountains and depth in the sea, and it's not just a flat place which allows for life. And yet with all that energy, it's not so hot that the surface is too hot for us to live on. And all of these things, finely tuned constants, look at the universe and seem to say this has been designed. So Dr. Francis Collins, who has been at the forefront into research in DNA, said, when you look from the perspective of a scientist at the universe, at the incredible complexity of life, there are 15 constants that have precise values. And if any one of these values was off by even one part in a million, the universe couldn't exist. There would be no galaxies, no stars, no planets, no people. A finely tuned universe points towards the existence of God. Now, some of you who have thought about this before might say to me, well, John, what about the multiverse? And the multiverse is this idea that there are many, many, many universes, not just millions, trillions. And at least one of them had to randomly strike the right conditions in which life could exist. And guess what? We happen to be the lucky ones because it's happened to us. You know, if our luck is that good, I think we should all go out and buy lotto tickets. Proposing a multiverse in answer to the response of a finely tuned universe, which undoubtedly the finely tuned universe points to a designer, proposing something else just shows the lengths that some people will go to find another explanation. The Christian writer Paul Copen says about those who cannot allow for the existence of God, the course of science will be to postulate the complicated and improbable because given there cannot be God, the improbable must be true. And so you come up with all these improbable theories of what might be to try and replace the idea that God has made things. And as well as this, you have the complexity of human life. So the DNA strands in 1953, that was before I was born. 1953, Watson and Crick suggested the double helix model for DNA. So many of you will know this really well, better than I do. Human DNA is so complex that even before I was born, they suggested what it looked like. And it's taken until I'm 57 before they've actually been able to put it all together. They had to wait until there were all these wonderful computers that could sequence all this stuff because it's so complicated within us. The discovery and decoding of DNA reveals a complexity we hadn't imagined. Now, I went back, I went to high school in the dark ages, the 1970s, when, and I remember in the science projects, I love science, in the science projects we used to draw human cells. And my drawings weren't all that good. But anyway, the general idea was that these human cells were sort of complicated, but not too complicated. In fact, a single cell amoeba was so uncomplicated that it would be quite relatively easy for one of those things to come into existence and to begin to evolve. But the complexity that we've found in DNA and RNA is such that it just can't happen. It's just so, so complicated for all this stuff to come together. And so creation brings together many strands of evidence for God. There's something that I think sort of starts to beat these things out, but it works for me. It may not work for everyone. God has told us he exists. In the scriptures, God has told us. He appeared to people. Appeared as an angel to Abraham. Spoke from the burning bush to Moses. And in other ways. Now, admittedly, we can't reach back in time and test these things scientifically. But something spiritual is happening here that needs some sort of an explanation. And in the New Testament, in the Old Testament, we see the activity of God. It's pointing to the existence of God. Perhaps in the New Testament, the biggest evidence is the resurrection of Jesus. So Jesus said to his friends, I'm going to be put to death and I'm going to rise from the dead. And his enemies had heard this, so they put a guard on his tomb. And in the midst of all this, Jesus said some really crazy things, if they're not true, some really crazy things to his disciples as he made extravagant claims about his death. He said, do not let your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe in God. And believe in me. And Jesus linked the existence of God and the power of God to the events of Easter. Now, our experience tells us dead people don't just rise from the dead. Medical intervention can resuscitate people from time to time, but there'll still come a time when they die. And I understand that skeptics may look at this differently, but if Jesus really did rise from the dead, then that is proof, great, great evidence that that God exists. So there's evidence in terms of what we see around us. There's evidence in the scriptures, physics, cosmology, astronomy, biochemistry, and the self-revelation of God, pointing to the existence of God. And again, I reiterate, it's all evidence. It's not proof. You can't prove the existence of God. God's existence, if it could be proved, you wouldn't need any faith. You wouldn't have any freedom to choose to believe or not believe. It would just be that God is there. And so the writer of the Hebrews reminds us of this, saying without faith it's impossible to please God. Because anyone who comes to God must believe that he exists and he rewards those who earnestly seek him. For some reason, I don't know what it is, for some reason God has chosen to make faith, not proof, the key factor in seeking him. Now suppose in our scientific age we could prove the existence of God. They would put at disadvantage all those generations that lived before us who didn't have that proof. But God hasn't made it proof. God has made it faith. So those generations before us and we and generations who follow can come and know God by faith. God has leveled the playing field. Now you might ask me, which of these arguments do I find most convincing? And I've got to tell you, none of them. They're good. They're good arguments. But to me, they're not the most convincing. The most convincing is this. God lives in my heart. Has done for years. Years and years and years. Walking with God. Knowing God. Loving God. Feeling God's power in my heart and my life. This is to me, convincing. And I can't speak enough of this. To me, the existence of God isn't theoretical. He is my joy. He is my delight. He is my strength. And he is my hope. He is my God, he is my friend, he is my companion in life. This is, to me, the greatest proof of the existence of God, that when a person takes a step of faith and believes in God, we meet God and God comes and dwells within us. Well, what difference does all of this make to us? If you're just beginning to seek God, you can know that there is good evidence for the existence of God. And I've put some resources in the bulletin, and you can look at books or talk to people, see DVDs, things like that. Christianity isn't irrational. You don't need to leave your mind at the door. The Bible calls us to love God with all our mind. That means you can engage your brain when you think about things of God and things of faith. However, again, I note, it's evidence, it's not proof. And at some point, if you're new to this, you've got to take that step of faith. You've got to take that leap of faith and simply believe. Now, many who know and trust God find their beliefs challenged today. And in a skeptical age where we're bombarded by militant atheists through books and magazines, some of you might be feeling ground down, as if there's such a weight of evidence here. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe God doesn't exist. But let me assure you, no one has proven that God does not exist. And there are very many good reasons to believe that God does exist. Therefore, let us as a church be a church that's able to give reasons for the existence of God and witness to the reality of our inner experience of God. You see, there are many people in our community who long for that something more. We need to be able to show them that it can be found in God. There are reasonable arguments. There are things that point towards the existence of God. No matter how much people like Richard Dawkins may say otherwise, his view, he's a militant atheist, his view is simply his opinion. And his belief based on his interpretation of the evidence. He has no proof. It's not unreasonable to believe in God. It's life-giving. It's life-changing. So let us then, as we go from this place, be the evidence of the existence of God in our lives. At home, or at work, or at school, or in our clubs, let's live to show that God exists and he lives within us. By our love, by our faith, by our hope, by our trust, let's show that God is real. And all of this to the glory of God, Father and Son and Holy Spirit. Amen. Amen. Well, I want to invite those who are going to help serve our communion to come.